Working here in the Barnett Shale requires that you have the best equipment available, because every job counts. Put Energy Weld Fab to work on your next project. Energy Weld Fab manufactures oil and gas production equipment, as well as fabrication of custom vessels, piping, and structural steel. The Energy Weld Fab sales staff has a wealth of knowledge working here in the state of Texas and other regions, as some of their biggest clients are folks like EOG, Chesapeake, Quicksilver, and XTO. Call Mike Clements at Energy Weld Fab's team today with your questions and ordering information at 903-297-2500. That's 903-297-2500. Energy Weld Fab is your number one choice for oil field and production equipment, because they understand that every job counts. That's Energy Weld Fab at 903-297-2500.
At the start of the game, everyone wants to win.
Okay, let's get them on three. One, two, three, team!
In the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, everyone's a winner. Whether you're an athlete, coach, donor, or volunteer, you can help put the heart and soul in sports by impacting the world for Jesus Christ. Join FCA and stand in the winner's circle.
And that's the end of the game.
No matter what the scoreboard says. Learn more at FCA.org.
The Western Company of Texas is the premier oil field water transfer service in the Bakken, Barnett, Fayetteville, Haynesville, and Woodward Shale. Basically, all the shale plays. Their goal is to efficiently transfer water to your next completion job with the best service possible to meet all your water transfer needs. With over 100 miles of water transfer pipe and over 90 high-capacity pumps on hand, they're ready to go to work on your next water transfer job 24/7, even with the most demanding timelines. Their employees log over 430,000 hours a year laying pipe in some of the roughest terrain with zero delays and zero excuses. Give their team a call at 682-831-9300. That's 682-831-9300. Or online at wct.us.com.
It's not about how much money you make, where you live, or what kind of car you drive. It's about whether you love what you do. At Pinnacle Bank, you'll always have someone who's interested in helping you achieve your dreams, because we believe in a personal approach to banking. That's the Texas way. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. To find a convenient location near you, visit us online at pinnbanktx.com. Pinnacle Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
We are ready to talk some Sooner football in our first segment, as Oklahoma looks to get back on track after a disappointing loss to Texas Tech last weekend. A lot of folks want to know what's going on with the Sooners and if they still have a legitimate shot at a national championship. If anyone can provide us with the answers, it is the senior writer with OU Insider. You can also listen to him on the radio on 1400 KREF right there in Norman, Oklahoma. It is our good friend James Hale. And James, I'm always so eager to hear what's on your mind, but really I want to get your reaction to such a disappointing loss that ended that 39 home game winning streak at Owen Field. What have you been able to make of all of this?
Well, it was a disappointing loss. It's one of the worst losses of the Bob Stoops era. You know, Bob hasn't lost much. He's only lost three times at home, and let's face it, he's got one of the best winning percentages in college football. You know, but I've seen every one of them, and that was one of the worst losses that they've had. It was one of the worst performances by a Sooner team since Coach Stoops has been the coach. Nobody saw it coming. I don't think we gave Texas Tech enough respect, any of us, including me. I think I had Oklahoma winning by 27. But their quarterback may be playing as any quarterback in the country, not just the Big 12, but in the country. He made amazing throws in this game. Tech caught the ball. Receivers got open. Defensively, they came up big on third down. The Sooners didn't help them by so many drop passes and, so many, poor runs and key situations. And so It's there's a little bit of disbelief around here. There was shock after the game. You know, in the post game, E, what was interesting, Bob came in and, you know, Bob's always good after a loss talking to the media, and he always is a good loser and praises the other team and things like that. And then we stood there for about 10 minutes with nobody in the room. And I'm sure the SID department at OU was having trouble getting players to volunteer to come in. You know, eventually they did, and of course the Sooners handled themselves well, and they always do. You know, and they came in, and eventually we talked to them, but you could tell they were shocked by what happened and what took place. And it's really an amazing situation, really, that they lost that game. The expectations are so high, and were so high, about possibly, you know, winning a national championship. They haven't won one since 2000, and that's how good they are. I mean, we sit there and assume they'll win some more. I mean, my comment right there, they haven't won one since 2000, like they're going to win one every 3 years or something. I mean, but that's just the way that people think around here, and the football team thinks that. The coaching staff has to think that way because the masses demand they think that way, and it's a tough way to play the game. But credit Texas Tech. What a performance. That is a really good 5-2 football team. They've lost two games by, you know, a touchdown against Kansas State. They should have won that game. They turned it over four times. They had two field goals blocked. That's a pretty good football team. And OU ran into a buzzsaw and lost a game they could have won. As bad as they played, they got outplayed on offense, defense, and special teams. Yet they only lost by three, and they still had a chance to win the game. That's how talented OU is, but they couldn't pull it off.
James Hale is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are talking about Oklahoma. Their streak was snapped at home. Sooners are in rebound mode. And so my question to you is, James, before we really dissect it and break it all down, and of course preview K-State on Saturday, is what is Oklahoma's mindset right now? I mean, how have they responded throughout the week with practice after, as you're really talking about, such a devastating loss?
Well, they've reacted by basically pulling in their horns, and they've circled the wagons. I don't know any other way to explain it. You know, Bob's cut back on media access.
Okay.
Says he's going to do it the rest of the year, which I never understand those moves by coaches, to be honest with you. Now we're dealing with OU just on Monday, at least in this game. And you can tell they've been a little bit defensive this week. They've been a little bit cautious about what they've said this week. So they've just, you know, they've had a players-only meeting on Monday. I really never know what that really does for a football team. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And so they've reacted in a way that's a little bit surprising. Again, so much expectations. That game was a shock to them. They've acted like it's a shock to them a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how they play Saturday. From what I hear, they've had good weeks, good practice days up until, throughout the week. I think they expect they're going to play well, but they didn't anticipate playing the way they did against Tech. Now, Kansas State's a whole different team, and it's a different style of team, so Oklahoma thinks they match up pretty well. And, you know, if they win out, they still have some great chances to do some things, but they've got to win out from this point to accomplish any of the goals they want to accomplish.
As promised to all of our listeners out there, we are going to preview K-State here in just a moment. I mean, Bill Snyder just doing a fantastic job. 72 years old. Forget about retirement. I mean, he's really got his team rocking up there in Manhattan. But let's back up for just a moment, because head coach Bob Stoops, he really did field a lot of questions at his weekly press conference. And one of the things that he shared that, you know, when you reflect back on that Texas Tech loss, the win at KU, but that his team just kind of lacked some of the intensity, that they weren't as sharp. How does that happen when you are in a championship run and mode and expectation season, James, and you are so talented?
Well, this is the second time this season, it happened after the Missouri game as well, that the coaches have talked about the team didn't have good practices through the week. And some of the players mentioned it too. And I agree with you. How can guys not have great practices when so much is on the line and so much is at stake, and you don't have good enough practices to where you don't play well in the game? Now, this is a mental maturity, and I know some teams are tougher than others. Some teams handle things better than others. Maybe some coaching staffs handle things differently and better than others. This is something, though, that's come up a couple of times, and it's really mind-boggling to most of us why it's like that. You know, why would a team go through that? Why are they struggling in practice? And, you know, and nobody can put their finger on it. You know, players kind of look at you when you ask them and they give you that disbelief look like, I don't know why. You know, but if we've always heard in athletics, man, you play as well as you practice. And, again, there's 2 weeks in a row. Now, maybe that's just something you say when you lose or you don't play well. Maybe you automatically say, hey, we didn't have a great week of practice. Maybe it really wasn't any different than any other practice. But it's certainly something they've thrown out there and certainly something they've laid at your feet. And it really, you just have to shake your head to it because it doesn't make any sense. It's like a player telling you in a college football season, hey, I couldn't, you know, we can't get up for every game. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. You play 12. I mean, you may only get 48 in a career. You know, it's, you can't get up for every game. I mean, E, did you get up for every basketball game at OU?
Absolutely.
I know you did because I covered you and I covered your team. I mean, I know you did. The reason why you did because you cherished every game. I mean, when players tell me that in college, I realize they don't understand the big picture and they don't understand. They may not be playing organized sports anymore after this. You know, so I don't know why you don't practice well. When I talk to the greats, Jimbo Elrod, Joe Washington, Dewey Selman, when Leroy Selman, when I had a chance to, you know, talk to that great man, and they always told me they loved practice. They came out of practice because it was fun. It was better than going to school. It was better than doing chores on the farm.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so they loved practice. And so I don't know. Today's athlete's just a little bit different. Those guys.
The senior writer with OU Insider and radio host on KREF out of Norman, Oklahoma, James Hale is with us. He knows the Sooners the very best. And I was dialing into your radio show earlier in the week, and you had a conversation with Oklahoma's color commentator, Merv Johnson, and I thought that you guys talked about something very interesting. It really shows you just how difficult it is to have an unblemished record, to have a perfect season, and to win a national title. Barry Switzer told you that, right, James?
Well, it's really hard. You know, as great as Coach Switzer was, he was great enough to win three, but he had a chance to play for four others. And, you know, I remember when Bob won his first one and Oklahoma didn't win it the next couple of years when they had teams that were capable of winning it. You know, Barry just kind of laughed and said, you know, because he had a conversation with Bob, and Bob said, hey, this is pretty hard. And Barry said, well, you didn't think you're going to win them every year, did you? you know, because it's just too hard to do. And Barry had some of the greatest teams. I think Barry had the greatest team never to win it, the 1978 Sooners, with Thomas Lott, Kenny King, Billy Sims, Victor Hicks, you know, Greg Roberts, and that group, Darrell Hunt, George Cumby. We can go down the list of great players that played on that team. And remember, they fumbled the ball 9 times at Nebraska and lost the game by a couple of points at Nebraska with, you know, by fumbling the ball at the 3-yard line. And that was the 9th fumble on the day, so they had fumbled a bunch, you know, throughout that day, and that was the only bad play that they had. But, you know, it's awful tough to win, and that gets proven out, I think, every single year when you have teams, just like Oklahoma did this week, when you have teams that you thought were going to win and you don't end up winning it. Coach Johnson's been coaching a long time. He understands that. He's been through those wars, and he's been through those battles, and he understands it takes a lot of things. A lot of things have to happen. Number one, you have to be talented. Number two, you have to be well coached. But you know what? A key variable is you have to avoid injuries, and you never know how the injuries are going to pile up. And you have to be lucky. If you think teams aren't lucky a little bit throughout seasons, even the greatest teams of all time, go back and look at film. Go back and watch their games. You're going to find two or three opportunities or two or three situations in the season that you say, man, they were pretty lucky there.
Well, and I'll jump in here, too. You know, the fact that, you know, Merv had talked about that, you know, you almost have to have that steadfast mindset. You can't change history. You can only focus on the moment and on the day. And as the Sooners look ahead, they've got to continue to do that. They can't, you know, continue to beat themselves up on what happened against Texas Tech.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they do have to move ahead. And that's another key. Do you continue to go over this over and over again? Do you continue to talk about this over and over again? Or do you say, all right, that's behind us, and move on and get ready for the games ahead? Because, again, if they went out, they're still Big 12 champions, they would have an outside chance for the BCS championship game, and at worst, they'd be going to a BCS bowl, and, well, it's really tough to have to go back to Phoenix. Gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I don't know what the team's going to do if they have to go back to Phoenix and play in the Fiesta Bowl, or you know, go to Miami to the Orange Bowl, or, you know, maybe Pasadena or whatever, you know. I mean, So there's still some great things for them to play for at this point.
Well, and the other thing, too, you have to factor in is that there were a number of key players that were missing in that particular game. You talk about running back Dominic Whaley, Casey Walker with the thumb. I mean, and I wanted you to also weigh in on linebacker Travis Lewis. I mean, he seemed to call out some of his teammates for not playing with injuries against Texas Tech. Now, we know Travis. I mean, he's an outspoken guy. We love him. But what was your take on that?
Well, you and I love him because we get great quotes. I love him anyway because he's a neat guy. I don't know if the coach is going to be talking about that kind of thing. But Whaley had the flu, so he'll play. But all this was a factor. As the game was developing and we started finding out who wasn't available, I was actually texting some friends and even some parents of some of the players, and I was telling them, hey, this is going to be tough. You can't lose 5, 6, 7 players that are key members of your team and not have it affect your team. They had to change the linebacker positions. They didn't have Tom Wart because Tech threw the ball so well. They put Corey Nelson at the wheel. Travis Lewis played the middle or the Mike backer. Well, Travis is not a Mike backer. He can play it, but that affected things a little bit and how you do things. The biggest injury was the knee injury to Jamel Fleming. Jamel's had to have minor scope. He might play this weekend. I don't think he will, but he'll certainly play next week against Tech. But that position turned out to be a albatross for the Sooners because Gabe Lynn replaced him and just didn't play very well. In fact, in the second half, they had to take their safety, Aaron Colvin, who has been a corner before, and they had to put Colvin in at safety, at corner, and they put Sam Proctor, in at safety. So they had to make some moves and do some things to try to, make things a little bit better and to try to, to compensate for all those injuries. But, make no mistake, those injuries did play a role in how they played and what they did. And they're supposed to have those players back, but that was certainly a struggle for them on Saturday. It doesn't matter who you are. I was really impressed with LSU, how they played without two of their key players and just pounded Auburn.
Great point.
Two, not 5 losses, not 6 guys, not 7 guys. And Oklahoma's one of the few teams in the country that I think can still win a game that way, but not when their opponent was playing at such a high level. Texas Tech played great. Remember, Texas Tech didn't turn the ball over once in that game.
Right, that's true. James Hale is with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. I wanted to bring up one of the positives out of that game was just the play and production of Roy Finch. His biggest game as a Sooner, James.
Well, Roy's getting more and more opportunities. The thing about Roy is a really good player. Roy's problems is probably learning assignments and just picking everything up. And when they had him trying to do multiple things in the game, or at the beginning of the season, because Whaley had earned the job, so they thought, we'll get Roy on the field in the slot, net receiver, and to do some different things. When they did that, I think Roy struggled picking up everything. Now that they put him back at tailback, he played the same position last year. Now his talent can just take over. He's very fast. He's got great balance. He runs hard. And I think that from this point on, he'll be a major player in the process. Whaley's supposed to be back for this game. Brennan Clay is ready for this game. Brennan is not as fast as the other two. He's very efficient. And, of course, the guy that excites us all is Brandon Williams, but he fumbled earlier this year, and, they haven't put him back into play. You hope at some point they give him another chance because I think he could have had a big factor in the game on Saturday. He's a home run hitter. He's a guy that can go the distance and – they have that kind of speed, and, you say, well, gosh, he's only touched it a few times and he's turned it over. Well, what if he never turns it over the rest of the season? You just don't know, and we keep wondering and waiting to see if he'll get another opportunity.
Well, it's great news hearing that some of these guys are going to be back and they can, finish out their season strong. But what about the Sooners were hit with another loss, tight end Austin Haywood. I want you to shed some light on this. How do you quit mid-season? This, as a former player athlete, I can't even identify with. I think it's incredibly selfish, and you are forfeiting, a whole year of eligibility when you could have just sat out.
Well, as much as I want to say nice things about Austin, it's hard because it is selfish. He's quitting because he's not getting enough catches and he's not getting enough playing time, yet he's in the rotation at tight end, and he's getting to play every single game. You know how many players on that team don't ever touch the field?
Exactly.
And they're not quitting. They're going through practice. They're laboring on the scout team. They're doing whatever they can do to help the team. And here's a guy that's mad because he's not catching more passes, and He's having to share time with a senior, Trent Rattery, who has served his time, played well at OU and is a very good player, and James Hanna, who's a very good player, an NFL future tight end, and he's got to share time there. He was on special teams. He was on kick coverage. He was very good on special teams. So he was probably playing 40% of the game, 41, 45% of the game, and that just wasn't good enough for him. And it's a shame. This guy is was going to be the starting tight end at OU for the next 2 years. And OU routinely puts tight ends into the National Football League. This guy has blown a great opportunity, I think, and you shake your head. You're puzzled by it. His family's been quoted in the paper saying he just wasn't happy at OU. He wasn't happy academically at OU and this and that. And okay, I hope the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, because usually it's not. And I think he's going to regret this at some point. He was really close to Kevin Wilson. Kevin recruited him. Kevin, of course, is the coach at Indiana now, the head coach at Indiana. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't transfer up there. I mean, he's got that opportunity. I mean, he could. He's never taken a redshirt year, and so that's a possibility. But, boy, it's a shock that he left the program. And that's another player. See, we didn't know, what happened to him, and we're watching the game, and I don't see him out there. And, they didn't talk about him after the game. And Bob actually came back into the press gathering after he met with us. He actually left and came back to announce Austin Haywood had quit the team, and they wished him the best. So that was kind of a weird deal, Lee.
It really was, and you never know what goes through a young man or a young woman's mind at 19, 20 years old, and they're emotional. You think about, who are they receiving counsel from? Who are they surrounding themselves with? And you'd said that the family said that he wasn't happy at Oklahoma. That's really difficult for me to understand, or perhaps to go to Indiana down the road. I mean, there's no comparison. These guys, they got to remember, 10, 20 years from now, when you come back to your alma mater, what do you want to be a part of?
Well, players get spoiled, and they always think there's always something better. And sometimes they get a false impression of their self-worth and just how good they are. I've always said this, that I think players can look at the roster, look at their positions, and they understand how good other players are. Sometimes that makes a decision easier for players. But in Haywood's case, and I'm sure Haywood looked at both those guys and said, I do some things better than both those players. For instance, he was the best blocker among the three. So I'm sure he looked at those guys and said, if I got all the opportunities, or if I got more opportunities, my role on this team would be even bigger. And, of course, the team's telling him, your role is already really big. You're one of the better players we have on this team. It's already really big. You happen to be at a position. We've got other good players. They deserve to play, too. And he didn't see it that way. And I think that is a selfish situation, especially when you're a team and you need all the good players you can get. And we know the tight end position always has hybrid athletes that are all-around athletes that can play a number of positions and a number of special teams, and he was used a bunch on the field. So it's a big loss, because he's very good in special teams too.
Okay, now we're going to shift avenues. We're going to take time to preview number 9, Oklahoma, as they are set to face the 8th-ranked Kansas State. And what a resurgence of the Wildcats under Bill Snyder. It really has been remarkable. I mentioned earlier, here he is 72 years old. I know that he got off to a little bit of a slow start after he came out of retirement, but his team is 7-0. And certainly this for Oklahoma, it's not something that, they're going to take lightly, because it is a tremendous challenge.
Well, he's really coaching his team the same way that he coached the first time. Now, this is not anywhere close to the task that he had when he first took over Kansas State, and Coach Stoops, Mike Stoops, Brent Venables, Mark Mangino were all on that staff. Coach Levitt, they were all there. He put together a great staff. I'm not sure about his staff now. It's obviously they're doing a great job. I don't know how many household names are going to come off this staff, but they didn't have as big a chore this time around. He's been able to do it with transfers, junior college players, and just good old-fashioned coaching. He's an innovator in the run game. Coach Venables talks about this all the time. Brent's his mentor. Brent loves him very, very well. But Brent's biggest challenge every year is trying to stop the run game and anticipate what Coach Snyder is going to do in the run game. Coach Snyder is still very much involved in the game planning, the scheming for every opponent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And he's still very much involved with the approach that Kansas State's going to take every game. They've got a running quarterback that's third in the conference in rushing that has close to 700 yards rushing.
Colin Klein.
Uh-huh. And they throw play action off of that. So Oklahoma, who really has developed, Brent's been able to develop multiple defensive schemes, and he's playing about 15 to 16 different guys or 17 different guys on defense. And I think he'll have to, he could go with bigger guys in this game, you know, two tackles, legitimate, you know, defensive ends at defensive end. Maybe Jaden Bird plays a little bit better because he plays the run well, even though Tom Wart is going to be back for this game. Maybe Joseph Ivaloy plays a little bit more at the Sam because he's a bigger player. You know, and he brings a little more, you know, striking ability out there. And Oklahoma can counter what Kansas State does. And here's the key to the game. Kansas State's able to get leverage on everybody. They're able to somehow seal off the outside and get rushing lanes. This year it's been for the quarterback. At times it's been more for the tailback. This year it's more for the quarterback. And OU has done okay against the run this year, but not great. But that will be their challenge to bow up, stop that game, hope their corners can cover their receivers, and see their minus. If they don't have Fleming, that's not a guarantee. Lynn has to play a lot better. I think they'll move Colvin down the corner. That means Proctor, who's a bigger player, can play in this game because Kansas State doesn't have a lot of speed, and they're a bigger team, but Oklahoma has to cover in the secondary because Oklahoma, they're going to have to put seven or eight in the box to make sure they stop the run game of Kansas.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Oklahoma is what, a two-touchdown favorite in this game, but how important is it for Oklahoma to come out of the gates early? They have got to play with a sense of urgency and pound right away.
Well, they haven't always done that this year, and that's been a little bit of an oddity. I think one of the key things in this game is that the only team that can score a lot of points in this game, Kansas State can score, but if Oklahoma can get up two touchdowns on them, that puts Kansas State in a mode they don't like to be in, and all of a sudden they are having to do some different things. So I think that's going to be interesting to see if Oklahoma can get out and get off to a good start like you just mentioned, but also to see if they can get up and get out and get a lead against Kansas State and force them to do different things offensively.
I think one of the great storylines, too, James, that you need to touch on is, of course, just the link between Bob Stoops and Coach Snyder. I mean, that, you know, Coach Stoops was there, 7 years in Manhattan?
Yeah, and, you know, Coach Stoops always talks affectionately about that time. I don't think Coach Snyder's the easiest coach to work for. I think he really drives his coaches, demands they spend a great deal of time in the coaching office, and Coach Snyder certainly does. You know, when Coach Snyder was young, he worked 21 hours. He actually made a joke that he was trying to figure out a way to exist without any sleep. he thought sleep was just a pain in the backside, I guess.
Is he married?
Yes. And
wow.
A very loyal, beautiful woman. And she loves him and to death, and I'm telling you, they're going to be together until they're no longer breathing. But, you know, it was the coaches sometimes that would, if they'd go eat, they'd bring Coach Snyder food. Then the next day when they'd go home for their 3 or 4 hours, they'd come up, that food would be sitting there on the desk, untouched. You know, so he just drives their coaches. It's one of the reasons why Brent Venables, when Bob was hired, Bob offered him the co-defensive coordinator job and a chance to share the defensive calling duties with his brother Mike. Brent's just like a Venables. I mean, the Venables consider him an additional brother and that kind of thing. So that's the kind of relationship that they have. Coach Snyder countered by saying that he was going to make Brent the defensive coordinator and co-head coach or assistant head coach. Brent, after 14 hours of meeting with Coach Snyder, decided to go with Bob. And the reason why, Brent just told him, he said, "Coach, your style of living, what you demand of your coaches is not what I'm looking for. I'm newly married. We want to have a family. I want to see my wife. I want to be with my wife some. And I want to do different things. I mean, I want to do something besides sit in a coaching office 24/7, which is what you're going to demand that I do, and I don't want to live that way." And they got into conversations, and Brent actually talked, and I've had Coach Snyder tell me about this meeting, that Brent told him that he needed to change some things. Talking about Coach Snyder, "Coach, you need to change some things. You need to do some things differently. You need to smell the roses every once in a while because you're not. You're not enjoying life. Your kids' lives have flashed before your eyes, and you don't even know what they've been doing. And, yeah, you're winning football games, and we're winning championships, and we're playing great here, but what's the cost?" And so I think Coach Snyder treats his staff a little bit differently this time around. But Coach Stoops talks about some of those times, and Coach Snyder gave Coach Stoops an opportunity be involved with a program as the at first the secondary coach and then the defensive coordinator, and at a time that Kansas State had the greatest resurrection in college football history. It's the best. It's the greatest comeback or the greatest resurrection in college football history. Coach Stoops says they were miserable when they got there. They were terrible. They were so bad. They had three defensive tackles the first year. So when they went through spring practice, they had to practice in intervals like in 10 to 12 minutes because the defensive tackles would get tired. They let them rest. And when the three guys were healthy and, okay, coach, we're not tired anymore, they practiced for 12 more minutes. They just didn't have players, Z. And that's why it will go down in history, though, as one of the greatest resurrections of a football program in college football history. And he's not quite having to do it again, but he's had to improve the program and get it going again, and he's done it.
Well, Bill Snyder certainly has done just a remarkable job, but I will say one thing that makes Oklahoma's program unique is really their commitment to family as a coaching staff. I mean, I think you've shared with us on our program that they have a family night, even during in-season, that they really encourage their coaches to have their families around.
Bob's been influenced by Coach Snyder and Steve Spurrier. Those are the two guys that have influenced him the most, and of course his father. So those are the three guys in his life, and he's taken some things from Coach Snyder, but he's taken from Coach Spurrier how to treat a staff. All the coaches talk about how they love playing for Bob. Bob allows them to do their job. He's not a micromanager. He wants them to be able to coach their position, do their job. That's in recruiting, too. In other words, he's not micromanaging recruiting. He's, hey, what do you got for me? Who are we in on? Who do I need to call? What are we doing? And then he does do the family nights. Every Wednesday, Coach Stoops pays for a restaurant to come in and bring food. The wives come up with their kids. They're running all over the place. It's a family atmosphere. On Sunday, one of the wives will cook or go get food. And, again, the family can come up on Sunday. It's not as rambunctious, but, the coaches are grinding on Sunday, looking at game film, getting ready for the next opponent. But there's some fellowship there. And he always tries to get the coaches home by 9:30 or 10 so they can put the kids to bed and so they can kiss their wife, goodnight. And he tells them, if you got other film work, we've got the technology today. Take one of those machines home. Watch whatever you need to do. If you need to stay up, but sit on your couch, put your feet up and watch. And he just believes you need to get refreshed every day. OU doesn't start at 6 in the morning. They start at 8 or 8:30. That usually gives them time. The fathers or the coaches take their kids to school and drop them off, which Coach Stoops thinks is a big deal. Coach Stoops does that today. So, and sometimes coaches may get in at a little bit of a different time. If their school system is 8:15 or instead of 8 o'clock or 8:40, that's okay. Coach Stoops is not a real stickler to that. And so he does try to present a family atmosphere within the football program.
We've been talking Sooner football with James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider. Of course, go and check out all of his articles. And my final question, I promise, James, is the big, big news, of course. We heard about it last week, TCU heading to the Big 12 Conference. What has been the feedback up there in Oklahoma? Are they excited about this? What are you hearing? What's the pulse?
Well, Oklahoma's excited about it. I mean, Oklahoma talked about TCU early. It was the national media and things said it wouldn't be a good fit because there's already a presence in Texas and things like that. But with Texas A&M leaving, it replaces Texas A&M as that presence in the Big 12. They're a quality program. Heck, one of the three home losses in the Stoops era at home has been by TCU. TCU's in the Rose Bowl last year. They're obviously a program that, has figured out how to recruit in the state of Texas and survive. They're a quality basketball program, especially on the women's side. They beat OU last year, and OU went to the Sweet 16, they had a very good run last year. The baseball team has always battled OU. That's always been a great battle. TCU's always in the NCAA tournament. There's other sports as well. It's obviously a positive thing. It keeps OU's presence in Texas from OU's standpoint. Their recruiting presence is always a big deal, and OU is never not like this situation, and I think OU feels like it's a very, very good deal.
It's a great fit for the Big 12 Conference, a great addition, and certainly, James, we'll enjoy having you come on down to Fort Worth, and we can always catch up, okay?
Hey, look forward to it. That means you're buying me that big steak.
Okay. Thanks, James. We'll catch up with you again real soon, and appreciate the time.
All righty. See ya.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead here with Jason Peter in just a moment.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports. Delivering the insight. Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else. Anywhere else. Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson. Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum. And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Miss one episode and you miss the game.